Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Welcome, welcome, one and all. A few things you should know before we begin. We swear.
And you bet your ass we do.
We drink.
You should drink
along with us.
Yeah, you should. Go get a drink. Press pause.
Yeah, push pause. Come back. We tiptoe right up to the heretical line. We bring our blasphemy with us.
Yes.
We'll try not to go over it too much, except when we do.
Yeah.
And
no
that's
apologies.
Because we're Catholic, and you don't have to be to listen. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Let's get into the important business. I'm Dizzy, and co-host Guess. Guess, what are you sipping on?
I'm drinking the bee's knees.
The bee's knees. And why? Why are you sipping the bee's knees?
I don't know. I just felt inspired. I was looking back over our heavenly menu and thinking about your milk and honey kind of motif that you had going on. And I opened the fridge and I saw that we had picked up not too long ago this mixer called the Bee's Knees. It's got ginger and honey and it's delicious. And you mix
Sounds
it with
awesome.
Bourbon and it makes you feel really fuzzy. And it's great. And I
like
love it.
Like you're in heaven already.
Yeah.
And that's appropriate because it's still the Easter season.
Totally.
So
what are you drinking?
Keep it going. I am sipping some lovely dark, dark red wine. Mm. I think it's Soda Rock.
Yeah.
I don't even know what varietal.
I believe it's a Zin that
you've got going there.
Yeah.
Bartender guest poured
me
a lovely Soda Rock Zin.
Yeah.
And I'm drinking wine because today we're going to be talking about the early church, and we know that they had wine.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely were all about the consumption of wine, both recreationally and liturgically.
And miraculously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Yeah, it is Easter season, and we
are still,
yeah, so like, you may notice, dear listener, that this is going to be filed under Better Late Than Never when it comes to Church Drunk.
Yeah.
The weekend came and arrived, and we were, lifing.
Yeah.
And then the week started, and we were still lifing.
There was a short time when we did things ahead.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
And so we were like, holy cow, like, we still have to do this episode of Church Drunk, the last of this season.
Here, here.
But also, like, holy cow, it's still Easter time.
Yeah.
Like, we are still Eastering, and it feels like a long time ago that we crossed the threshold of Good Friday, and we're doing our, like, end of Lent Church Drunk. And now here we are, several episodes later. Still in the Easter season.
I mean, this year it's kind of easy to keep track of because Easter was on April Fool's, April 1st.
Right.
So we are weeks into April, almost into May, and it's still
Eastertide. Yeah.
So 50 days of feasting.
Totally.
Get your feast on.
Get your feast on. One of the ways that we celebrate Easter in the church, and one of the ways that you know that it's still Easter time is when you go to church and there's no Old Testament reading. You get Acts of the Apostles instead of something from the Hebrew Scriptures during that first reading. So we're going to touch a little bit today on those kind of early Christian communities and why we read from the Acts of the Apostles and what was going on there. And then that was going to kind of lead into some other gospel-y things.
Have a more a typical church-drunk meander into imaginations. But,
so
but to start with the real stuff, like, how do you feel about Acts of the Apostles? Are you a fan?
Well, so for the scripture nerds out there, you know, this one's for the Bible homies. it's like Acts of the Apostles is really just an extension of Luke, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Luke's gospel and Acts of the Apostles written by the same person, written for the same audience, and just kind of broken up into like the Jesus story and then the post-Jesus story. And I feel like I always need to remind myself of that because I feel like Luke's gospel is very teachery, right? Like, like Jesus is an educator. Jesus is kind of, you know, there's tons of parables and stuff like that. And then Acts of the Apostles is much more fantastical. Like, you've got, you know, the apostles, regular old people, going around and performing healings and doing all of these sort of strange,
all
miraculous
things. All the stuff
that
Jesus did, really.
Right.
They have all those miracles.
I love the message of it, like that we can go out and do as Jesus did. But, I mean, you know my skeptical side is they're being like, bullshit.
I mean, it wasn't all roses for them,
right.
But it's true. In the Acts of the Apostles, it seems like it's kind of a little golden age for the early church.
Right.
You know, they're sharing everything in kind.
Yes.
Like if you're ever looking for like the quintessential community scripture,
it's a hippie commune.
It's in Acts. Everybody put in what they had and
took
out what they needed and la la la.
Yep.
It's like, yes, that's awesome. And like you said, maybe not totally accurate, But they also had like run-ins with the Sanhedrin, with the you know Jewish officials.
Yes,
you know they have some scrapes.
I want to love the Acts of the Apostles, and and I suppose I should more because like I love a good you know like Smokey and the Bandit kind of escaping jail. Yes. I love the idea of you know pirates sailing off and you know colonizing the island and saying we're gonna live the way that we want to live. And that's what Acts of the Apostles is, like bucking society and saying we're going to do what we want to do and risking persecution for it and doing all those kinds of things. I just have issues with like some of the actual story, some of the details being a little over the top. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Acts of the Apostles, like I should love it, as you say, because it's for us, right? Like it's for the Gentiles. Like you could argue like the whole point of it is like, and because the Jews, on the whole, you know, rejected us, that's what pushed the Christian message, the Jesus message, out to the Gentiles and out to the world.
Yeah.
It's like, we should be like, yes, way to go, guys. But honestly, I just feel like it's a little bit farther from Jesus. It's just a little bit farther from the Gospels.
Yes.
And I don't love it like I should.
Right.
So.
But there is a point to be made in reading it during the season of Easter.
It's great.
That these are the people who were responsible for taking the message of Jesus, the message of the resurrection, the good news of the gospel, and making it something real and tangible for the world to sort of digest. That like without the efforts of those first Christians, the first followers of the way, then there wouldn't be this like global movement to continue to try and honor what Jesus did, which when you boil it down is pretty simple, right? Like love everybody. Like just take care of your neighbor no matter what the circumstances are, no matter who you're, who society says you're supposed to love and hate. That message could have died out had it not been for those early people.
Totally. Like we need them and I sincerely appreciate them. And they're the ones, they're the movement. They're who keeps it going. I think it's just that not only is it a little bit farther from Jesus, it's a little bit closer to Paul. And I don't always love Paul.
You do so have Paul issues.
I'm not a Pauline person.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, this is actually the best of Paul, really. In the Acts of the Apostles, we see his conversion. And he's definitely a mover and a shaker and needed. But I like the real deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's reflective because, like, we're not the real deal.
Right.
But we want the real deal.
Well, and something to remember about the apostles in the Acts of the Apostles is that even though they have these superhero moments where they're able to sort of channel the Jesus inside of them.
Sure.
They're also like a bunch of fuck ups in some ways. Like they are not perfect. They don't do everything according to the way that Jesus would want them to do it.
Sure. There's,
you know, like
we start seeing hints of the little in-house fighting that is still our legacy.
Even when we see it through like the rose-colored glasses of, you know, Luke writing the gospel and writing the story of the early Christian communities, you're not able to eliminate the fact that it was a rocky road, both externally, persecution, and internally with infighting and people disagreeing and
a painful separation from the Jewish community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a painful thing for the earliest Christians who were Jewish, you know, all the apostles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talk about like, you know, the Acts of the Apostles as an extension of the Gospel of Luke.
Which I love. Like, why do I love Luke so much and not Acts?
I should love it. It's confusing,
And some scholars will be like, Luke and Acts, and like it's one book.
Yes.
But it's not.
Right.
I'm sorry.
There's a separation there. There's a dividing line. And today, actually, as we record, happens to be the feast of St. Mark, the evangelist. So there's some gospeliness in the air.
True.
And when we talk about Acts of the Apostles and we talk about early Christian communities, the gospels that we recognize grew out of some of those early Christian communities. Nobody, as far as we know, was taking down a historical account of the life of Jesus as it was happening.
Yeah.
So the closest we get is Mark's account.
Right.
That was the first gospel written.
Yep.
And then we have Luke and Matthew around the same time. And then
close.
We have John, who's like a total oddball.
But no matter what time he comes in.
Yeah, he was a little wacky. But then there's these other gospels that were also part of the early Christian tradition, but have not been adopted as canonical gospels.
Right.
Recognized by the church.
They didn't make it to the official list.
Exactly.
And not that many documents did,
right,
really, given the prolific nature of a time when you were writing shit by hand.
Yes.
Like, these people were dedicated.
And not everybody could read and write, like, not by a long shot.
So, you know, all these, like, letters and stuff in the New Testament are, like, read aloud and made copies of and preached and et cetera. But there were also, quote-unquote, gospels, right?
Yes.
Like,
the accounts
message
of the life of Jesus.
Right.
That didn't make the cut to get into the Bible.
So we've got Thomas, we've got Mary Magdalene, we've got James, and later people like Justin Martyr and all that.
Yeah.
So the non-canonical gospels, sometimes you wonder, like, why weren't these included? And then you read them and you're like, all right, well, they don't quite fit the theme of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Right. So, like, there's a certain amount of crossover, and not to get too deep into Bible nerdism, but in order for a gospel to sort of be widely accepted, it had to kind of match up with some of the other gospels out there in terms of the story that it was telling. And so that's where we kind of get Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And John, I don't know, I guess we just really loved what John had to say and therefore adopted him as the fourth canonical gospel, but non-synoptic gospel.
Well, but looking at the other, maybe they wanted to have a slightly different one. But he's, if you compare the gospel of John that's in the accepted Christian scriptures to, like, the gospel of Thomas or something, like, he's definitely saner.
Right.
You know, we're seeing a more accurate... And he sticks to the, like, life of Jesus, the parts that Matthew and Luke also focus on.
He does have some crossover, not as much as the other three. But so you have these non-canonical gospels that really are, like, they have been officially decided to be, like, coming out of left field for one reason or another.
But they're a real good time.
And we touched on the Gnostic gospels, actually, at some point within the last couple of weeks this season.
Well, we talked about Gnosticism.
Yes,
and
Pelagianism,
the heresies.
And so these Gnostic...
Which we are not.
we are not, as it turns out. Although everybody else is, according to Pope Francis. Just not us.
I mean,
I think he wrote that.
Well, we're all prone to it, maybe. But like, I just mean here on Church Drunk, we don't tend to hit those two particular heresies.
No, I remember. That was in the exhortation, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everybody's doing this except for Dizzy and Guess.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so you have the Gnostic Gospels where the hint is that Jesus had some sort of special knowledge that he could share with his most trusted apostles.
Super secret.
And that this would be the key that would unlock the gates to heaven.
Yeah.
And that for some reason he only shared it with some people. And those people seem to, for the most part, keep it to themselves.
Well, or it says, like, they went out and, like, spread the good news, but, like, one person at a time. Like, hey, come here, I got a secret.
I'll teach you the secret.
If you'd like to buy into the scheme, I will give you some product to sell.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the gospel of, like, according to Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
Which is, I know, is one of your personal faves and fits in that Gnostic gospels category.
Yes, this is a very loving gospel where Jesus and Mary have a very intimate relationship. I think Dan Brown appreciated the gospel according to Mary Magdalene later.
Mary was Jesus's very favorite person.
Yes, and they had special time where he told her his deep, dark, special kingdom secrets. And I like the part in this... You like that? Where Mary, you know, goes to the other apostles and is like, I have this special knowledge that Jesus told only me. And they, like, have this little... mini baby apostle conclave amongst each other, like, do you think that's true? Let me think about it. And they eventually decide that, yes, it probably is true. So, like, they, like, double down and, like, yep, Jesus and Mary were so tight that he definitely told her his special secret.
I love the idea of Jesus, like, raising his eyebrows at Mary Magdalene and, like, hey, you want to have some special secret knowledge about the kingdom of God time? Like, yeah, let's go. Come on. Let's do it. Let's
over
do it.
Here.
Let's do a Gnostic quickie.
No, nobody else needs to know. Shh, come here.
And then I also love the idea of the apostles getting together and having a debate, right? Like, okay, well, Mary says she has this special knowledge, and I know Jesus really loves her a lot, and they spend a lot of time together. On the other hand, she is just a woman, so how could she actually know very much?
Right.
Yeah.
It's this big debate for them.
Yeah. Although, if you go back to that time and you look at the early Christian communities, women actually did play a fairly prominent role. Most scholars think that women were not excluded from those communities, and some of the most dedicated apostles were women that were leading these communities.
Well, and they're pretty apparent in a lot of Paul's letters and a lot of the letters, actually, in the New Testament.
Yeah.
And we don't think Paul was any kind of feminist.
No,
you know?
Not by a long shot.
But just like today, No offense. Often it's the women folk who are like on the ground, boots going, running the like local Christian communities. And that was apparently a very old tradition.
Yeah.
So
there's the Gnostic Gospel of according to Mary Magdalene. One of my personal favorites is the Secret Gospel of Mark, which really is not an entire gospel, but it's these additions that they found or they think that were supposed to be additions to the Gospel of Mark, which is the earliest gospel and paints the most sort of the raw portrait of Jesus kind of. But apparently the secret gospel was a little too raw because Jesus raises a man from the dead and the man falls in love with Jesus.
Oh.
Well, no, he just loves Jesus. So he loves him. Doesn't say that he falls in love with him, but he opens his eyes from being dead and immediately loves Jesus.
He's like a newborn duckling that just like latches on and to then, Jesus.
Much like Mary Magdalene, Jesus and this young man go and they spend some quality time together alone on their own for 6 days. And Jesus is unlocking the kingdom of God for this young man.
Dang.
His like sister shows up and they like send him away. They're like, no, go away. You're not allowed. So it's a little too racy for inclusion and probably like, I mean, there's no way to say what's true and what's not true in the gospels. There's just no way. We can kind of get evidence of what is and is not in our synoptic gospels and we can try and build support for this or that. But when it comes to like historical fact, we simply don't know the reality, but there's always a very good chance when you find any writings about Jesus that whoever the author is has a bias, right? And they're trying to say, well, Jesus was on my side for one reason or another. So,
well, and like a lot of these non-canonicals were written a little bit later, so that makes them maybe less likely to be totally factually accurate.
Totally.
And personally, I like Jesus in the canonical gospels where he's like, you apostles are freaking idiots. And here's what I'm saying and you still won't get it.
Yeah.
I like that version rather than like Jesus grooming one guy off to the corner. You know?
Well, and in either case, right, whether Jesus is in love with Mary Magdalene or in love with this young man that he just raised from the dead, it makes me kind of appreciate the fact that that side of Jesus, if it did in fact exist, whether any romantic side of
Predatory Jesus.
No, just romantic was left out of the Gospels.
Oh, okay.
You know, like I know that there's one side of the debate to be had where it's like, well, I wish that we knew if Jesus, you know, ever fell in love or had a family or, you know, this or that. But at the same time, it wouldn't really affect his message in any way. And so, like, having him be just this person, this figure who was more attached to the whole world than he was to any one person kind of makes it easier to relate to.
I mean, I don't personally have an objection if there had been, like, a more like stably romantic side.
Not at all. I wouldn't object to it.
And I think Mark would have mentioned it because like we have references to like Peter's mother-in-law and all this. Like, I don't think they would have edited that out necessarily.
And Mark is where you hear mention of Jesus's family.
Totally. Like his brothers.
Siblings. Yeah. You get this.
You mean Joseph's much older children or his cousins?
Yes.
No.
Mark is where you get Jesus's family showing up and trying to take him away because they think that he's insane.
Right.
Yeah. So you're right. Like if there had been some sort of special connection between Jesus and somebody else, probably would have been mentioned in
Mark. Mean, if Jesus had like an angry baby mama or like an ex who was not happy with him going around, we would have heard about it.
Totally.
It would be in there.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're both circling around our favorite non-canonical gospel. Everybody's favorite. If you haven't read it, you should Google it. It's a good time.
The Infancy Gospel of Thomas. Ah, so good. Not to be confused with the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas.
Or the Coptic Gospel.
The Coptic Gospel of Thomas.
Yeah. There's like three Gospels of Thomas that are all not in the regular canon. But the only one that's, I mean, they're all great, sure, whatever. But the best one,
the Infancy Gospel.
Yes. Don't miss it. In which a prepubescent 5- and 6-year-old Jesus like actually raises hell on his neighborhood. Yes. Betters his elders with his wit.
Yeah, he's like this little snark. Tiny superhero who is also kind of an asshole.
Like all small children.
As many children are.
You know, they're selfish. He's like, and it's very careful. I think the Catholics like this because he's always like 5 or 6 years old.
Yes.
Like it's before the age of reason.
Yes. Right.
It's just selfish little childhood things, except he's supernatural, so sometimes he kills a kid
because
he's real mad.
He gets angry, right? Yeah. Like, instead of shoving a kid down in the play yard, he just kills him.
When your temper tantrums are actually fatal to others.
Or a teacher. When he's like, I don't want to do my homework, and just goes like, zap, kills the teacher.
There's evidence of him bucking the Sanhedrin even back in the day when he, like, makes little toys on the Sabbath, and they're like, Joseph, what's wrong with your kid? He's a sinner on the Sabbath. And Jesus is like, really? Fine, I'll kill them. Boom.
Zap. It is. It's hilarious.
It's such a good time.
Because it does, I think at the heart of most people is the question of, like, how did Jesus become Jesus, right? Yeah. Like, at what, like, we hear the infancy narrative, which half of it is symbolic and not even really, you know, legit. And then you get to the baptism. So there's 30 years-ish that we don't really know that much about. There's a couple of episodes where Jesus is, like, teaching in the temple and things like that.
Being a bit of a snarky kid to his teachers.
Right. And his mom. Mom shows up and he's like, woman, this is not your place, right? Like, I mean,
get back in the caravan.
She's like, go home. Yeah. So, like, I think everybody's a little bit curious about what formation process would lead Jesus to be Jesus, and the infancy gospel of Thomas would say that, well, Jesus always was Jesus. He just, you know, needed to learn how to control
it. Yeah. And, you know, it's important to note that this infancy gospel of Thomas is meant to be like a reverent writing about
totally,
him.
Yes.
Because the end of
he
it
was
is
so
like,
powerful that he couldn't even control it.
And
early on,
he had like the original like snowflake parents. Like, we just love this child
so
much.
Totally.
He's such a blessing from the
Isn't
Lord.
He wonderful?
You know? And the end kind of like wraps up with like, and Jesus was just this wonderful being. Like, you know.
Joseph's just standing there like, oh, you just killed the hell out of that kid.
But
way to
thanks
go.
For making my woodworking easier, son. Like, they're the people on the like ancient tent block who everybody was like, damn, Jesus.
Oh God. Mary and Joseph, I can't stand them. And they've
but
got
they
that
think
kid.
That kid is perfect. What?
Oh, man.
Anyway, that one's always a fun.
So if you haven't looked up the non-canonical gospels that just make you, they give special insight into those early Christian
inaccurate
times, which was kind of like a theological Wild West. Like, you could write whatever you wanted because Jesus was this figure that was still taking shape in the minds of a lot of people in terms of who he was and what he did, and he was able to conquer death, and isn't that fantastic? Let's write something totally ridiculous about him.
I mean, the sweet part of it is showing people's, like, sincere wonder and, like, engagement with the story.
For sure.
You know, nowadays we maybe don't have that quite as much. So it's kind of cool. It's a nice part of Christian history, if not a historical Jesus history.
Now, so, you say we don't have that as much.
Right. So to add to this rich tradition.
But perhaps we should.
Oh, gosh. So Guess had a wonderful idea about what if there were more non-canonical
gospels.
Yeah.
So if we were to take this idea of being able to tell stories about Jesus from the perspective of different people and bring it into modern day times, right? And we're not talking about historical Jesus. We're talking about a non-canonical, right? It does not have to match with the gospels that we find in the Bible. This is just, you get to write what you want about whoever you want, whenever you want, because it's the Wild West of theology.
I like that.
What would happen today in today's world?
So you were pretty prolific in this. So we're going to let you start because I did not have as much time for this.
I'll give a couple of examples.
Sure.
All right. For example, the gospel according to Trump.
Oh, gosh.
Would follow something as such. The gospel according to Trump, in which during the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus was preaching on the hill, talking about blessed are the poor in spirit, etc., etc. But on the opposite hill, Judas was preaching to a huge crowd, the biggest crowd ever.
His little Judas.
There was more people gathered to hear Judas preach at the Sermon on the Mount than had ever been gathered before. And he was giving a sermon with the best words, all of the words, and they were all the best words, and they were fantastic. And that would be pretty much the long and short of the gospel according to Trump.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, who is in the pantsuit. In this gospel. Yeah.
Crooked Mary Magdalene.
Oh, all right. What else? What else? Another gospel.
Well, a classic example would be the gospel according to George Lucas. In a galaxy far, far away, John the Baptist teaches Jesus how to use the Force. All the while, St. Peter and his sidekick Chewbacca are piloting the Millennium Falcon in a series of intergalactic adventures. See how this works?
And all the other, like, apostles could be, like, the droids. Like C-3PO.
Who's, I would guess that C-3PO would have to be Thomas, because he's totally the one that annoys the hell out of everybody.
Like, let me see it. Yeah. I don't believe it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Got another one?
Sure, I can throw out one more. Okay. Let's see.
And what's the one that was really amusing you when you were writing it?
I'm going to save that one.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I'm going to save it. The gospel according to... Okay, the gospel according to the USCCB, the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops.
The conference.
This is that part where we get a little heretical.
Okay.
Yeah, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. The gospel according to the USCCB... In which Mary Magdalene doesn't exist, Jesus celebrates Sunday Mass with his closest male friends and hears their confessions and collects frequent tithes of loaves and fishes.
Oh, dear.
See?
All the loaves and fishes facing away from the congregation. I don't know. I have a soft spot for the USCCB. I don't always like them, but there are a few who I'm quite...
Yes.
Overall, like, all you have to do when you're really mad at the USCCB...
Yeah.
...is go read their documents on employment and rights of workers.
Exactly.
And then realize, to get mad again, once you've gotten not so mad at them, that they don't apply this shit to their own people.
Yes.
But still.
Their
hearts are in the right place.
Words are good. Actions sometimes need support.
Yeah.
And not even all the words are good.
And honestly, we can kind of blame them a little bit for contributing to the current reality of the gospel according to the Dorito.
Yes.
So, yeah USCCB, you're right. I'm not so happy with you. All right. Well, I had a fun kind of like... media one. I was thinking, what if there was the gospel according to Food Network? In which case,
I like it.
You know, the kingdom of heaven is built on like making your own mayonnaise, plating things nicely, roasting vegetables of all sorts. You know, just like stop using truffle oil. Like that's like the number one sin. Just
imagining like
the Ina Garten is actually the Holy Spirit being like, just throw it in the oven for Jeffrey. Like,
it's like
here's some chicken.
Two paragraphs and then 20 chapters of The Last Supper.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have this, like the Iron Chefs are all battling it out. You know, little
like
Angel
it.
Giada and Devil Giada are telling you what to do.
I like it.
All right.
I like it. I've got the infancy gospel according to J.K. Rowling.
Ooh.
In which Jesus, fresh off his childhood escape from the murderous Herod, who shall not be named, returns to Galilee to live in Mary and Joseph's spare closet under the stairs, but is called away to learn the ways of the masters in the temple where they are amazed at his youthful knowledge and wisdom.
Nice. Mm. And if he has like a little stigmata, you know, it's like a scar.
Oh, like the scar.
Yeah.
I like it.
He'd be like, it hurts.
Totally.
All right.
Another ranty one, the gospel according to Scott Pruitt, in which Jesus dictated the Sermon on the Mount in a vast, expensive soundproof booth and used a giant water balloon slingshot to fling balloons filled with toxic coal ash sludge at polar bears from the top of Arctic oil rigs.
And then the plastic from those water balloons
went into the ocean
and choked the animals.
That's right, microplastics. Oh, you see where my head's at. The gospel according to Scott Pruitt sucks balls.
Yeah, I don't think that's a gospel. That's no good news.
Yeah.
What's the antithesis of a gospel?
Well, I mean, the gospel according to Scott Pruitt is like, the world is all going to end anyway, so who cares, because I get to go to heaven. That's what Jesus is saying.
Gosh, I feel like there's a whole swath of the country.
Did you know he went to go visit the Pope? Scott fucking Pruitt went to go visit the Pope.
This Pope?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he went to visit the Pope. He went to the Vatican, and we paid for it.
Well, anybody can go to the Vatican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ass clown.
I mean, I just like to look at Pope Francis's pictures with Donald Trump where he just looks so unhappy. The Pope, who's always smiling, has like the, like, face on.
Yeah.
All right. Scott Pruitt.
The gospel according to Tim Burton, where Jesus does not actually ascend to heaven, but instead wanders into a magical forest. Tired of playing the role of the Messiah, he finds a series of doors and chooses the one that takes him to Buddhist town.
What's this?
Where he meditates under a Bodhi tree.
That is like the most meta thing if like imaginary Jesus goes to meditate under the tree and then like becomes enlightened and is just more himself.
Right,
like,
exactly.
What?
Comes back as still Jesus. Yeah.
Quite magical.
You have any more? Because I got my last one.
Nope.
You're going to love this one. The Gospel According to George R.R. Martin.
Oh, George R.R. Martin. I hate you, George R.R. Martin. Write a damn book.
In which Joseph dies.
Obviously.
And then the Baptist dies. And then Mary dies.
The wedding at Cana is a red wedding.
Everybody dies.
The red wedding at Cana.
And then Peter dies. And then Thomas dies. And then Jesus dies and comes back from the dead. And then Paul has a miraculous conversion and dies. And the story never ends.
My only question, is Peter a direwolf? Yes or no?
Obviously.
Yes. That's the best one ever.
The red wedding at Cana.
You know what? That's the thing, though. This gospel will never get written because fuck you, George R. Martin.
It may get started,
but
it'll never get
finished. There'll be like a lovely epilogue wherein all the characters are listed.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thus concludes our season.
Sorry to end so yelly.
With a giant fuck you, R. Martin.
Not even sorry.
Well, that will be the end of this particular season of Church Drunk.
Yeah.
We're going to take a few weeks off, maybe hit you with a bonus episode at some point.
Summertime.
And then we'll be back with summertime episodes. And if you have ideas or suggestions for what you would like to hear on Church Drunk,
we would love to hear them. You could email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at churchdrunkpod and tell us what we should talk about. Or maybe what your non-canonical gospel would be about. And
we're gonna spend a little time in our planning session, getting ready for the next season. Maybe also updating the blog a little bit. So
more to read, less to listen to.
Yeah,
for the next.
That's what's
bit.
In store for the next few weeks. And we wish you a happy end to your Easter season as it continues to go on. And thanks for listening to Church Drunk.
The Gospel According to Dizzy
and Guess.
Bye.